Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 241. This week I'm being joined by the incomparable Mr. Mark Cameron, aka at Lefty Boy from Twitter. Mark is one of those fantastic supporters who travel everywhere to see Celtic. I'm sure if Celtic were playing on the moon tomorrow, he'd find a way of being there. So who better to speak to than Lefty Boy about the League Cup victory, the Cup quarter-final replay, league performances and the Celtic FC Foundation. Oh, and is Ronnie Dyer the sexiest Celtic manager in history? And Mark is on the Celtic FC Foundation Supporters Committee, and one of the forthcoming events of that is the Celtic FC Foundation's Golf Charity Day, which is taking place on World Autism Day of the 2nd of April. As I record this, I think there might only be one or two team places left, literally, not figuratively. And it's also just been announced that the number of ex-players playing, including Bobby Petter and Tom Boyd. If you're interested, it's £100 for a person to play, £400 for a team of four for the four ball. It's £40 a place for guests. And you can email cfcfoundation@celticfc.co.uk. or phone 01415514291. But enough of me, on to Lefty Boy, Mark Cameron, talking about the sexiest man to manage a Celtic football club, Ronnie Dyer. So Mark, over to you. So, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, Harry. Very well indeed. Enjoyed the game last night, enjoyed the weekend just passed, and I think things are looking pretty rosy, I would say.
So, first questions first. Is Ronnie Dyer the sexiest manager Celtic have ever had?
Let me think about that one.
I completely threw you after telling you what we were going to talk about.
Yes, you have. You've thrown a spanner in the works there. I think he certainly is engaging with the support. And you've seen last night where, you know, far more than normal would have hung back at the end of the game to see the Ronnie Roar in front of their particular stand. And certainly, once the final whistle goes, most people tend to troop off. But now we wait for the Ronnie Roar in front of our stand, and then everyone else does it on the four sides. So, yes, he's certainly bringing a little bit of bond between the players, if you like, or certainly the club and the supporters. And I think things like that really help everyone get what the club's all about, and I think it gives you a better appreciation of the type of guy that Ronnie Dyer is. I have to say right from the outset, Harry, that I've been on the Ronnie bus from day one. I felt he was a good appointment, certainly a little bit risky, but it was worth, it looks as if it's going to be worthwhile, and I was certainly very interested when his name came up as a potential candidate for the job, and you know, doing a little bit of research into, you know, his past in Norway, then it got me excited, I would say, from a very early stage about him as our manager. And although there was some early wobbles, shall we say, around the Champions League qualifiers, I think he's stuck with it. And he's beginning to see the fruits of his labour.
So I too was on that Ronnie bus, and for exactly the same reasons as you. I remember somebody speaking to me a year before, or maybe 9 months before Neil Lennon left, and saying, if Neil Lennon was to leave, who would you want as manager? And I said, well, I don't know who I would want as manager, because I've just got a CV of what I would want as manager. I probably would want a non-British coach for us to try something different, because domestically we should be doing all right. I'd like someone who is playing in the more modern style of football, with the high pressing up the park, and the way that the top European teams are playing. Probably a young manager that we can have for 5 or 6 years. And so when Ronnie Dyer came along, I thought, brilliant, he's ticking the box of what I'm looking for. And then when he started talking about the style of play, I remember saying to people, I'm not saying Ronnie Dyer will succeed, but I want Ronnie Dyer to succeed, because what he describes he wants Celtic to do is exactly what I want Celtic to do.
Yes, exactly. I think the only thing that I was a little bit concerned about was his lack of experience in Europe, Harry. But, the other things you talk about, being a more modern, younger manager who would come on and develop, particularly some of the Scottish talent, as opposed to going abroad and buying some average players, was something that interested me, certainly in terms of his philosophy and the high-tempo pressing game was something that I liked the idea of, although I wasn't overly sure how well that would be successful in Europe, particularly with a younger manager. But I think we've seen some success of that more recently. I think that his philosophy in terms of fitness and diet, that type of thing, was something that we had, as a club, had let slip, and it was something that I felt we needed to address. And I think we're seeing the benefits of that now, with the players are certainly becoming more and more stronger in the second half of games. And last night, for example, you knew fairly early on that we were going to be okay last night. Yeah. That once we got a goal and then we started to push on, that it was unlikely that Dundee United would be anywhere near good enough for us. And I felt we really come on to really quite a good game. I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed the game last night. And as I said, I would think that the players are enjoying their football.
So you and I are towards the front of the Ronnie bus. There's a guy, Thomas Haverstock from Winnipeg, who continually tweets me after a podcast. I think Thomas is on the Ronnie Dyer bus. There are some people who are throwing stones at the Ronnie bus, wearing Celtic scarves, throwing stones at the Ronnie bus at the beginning. Should we let them on?
There's always more room on the Ronnie bus. The bigger the bus, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I know some really close friends who were very vocal in terms of their opinion of Ronnie. Up until very, very recently, and I'm talking the last 4 to 5 weeks, and a few in particular are, I look forward to seeing them at the game and after the game. A few I seen last night after the game and gave them a Ronnie roar as they came out the stadium when I met them. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly people who have not been convinced by him, and I think that coming to a foreign country and having the perseverance to stick with it, because some of the people who were throwing stones at the Ronnie bus were pretty vocal while they were doing so, and he didn't have a great amount of support in the media, it has to be said, over the early part of the season. And I think he's gradually winning those so-called experts or former players over. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely...
apparently the police are going round to Chris Sutton's house in the morning. The milk bottles haven't been moved for weeks. The papers are filling up his letterbox. People are getting quite concerned. Because, I mean, you used to get up in the morning and you'd open the curtains and Chris Sutton would be standing... You'd go to clean your teeth and Chris Sutton would be standing in your shower saying, Ronnie Dyer is crap. And, yes. And now you can't find him anywhere.
Yes, yeah, I would be concerned about Chris and a few others that were not overly supportive of the manager. And you've got to give people an opportunity. You've got to give them a chance. He was never going to come in there and turn things around overnight and get him playing his way. There were some, certainly some early adopters, but there's also been some in the team who, you know, have taken a bit more time to settle and adjust to the manager's expectations and the way of playing football. And it's like any change in any walk of life at your work, Harry, that change just takes a little bit of time. Unfortunately, we as football supporters tend to be pretty impatient and want results overnight, but he's stuck with it. Obviously, the club's stuck with it, and he's got the players on board. And it's looking really good. It's looking really good.
People say they don't like people who say, "I told you so." Well, do you know what? I don't care if people don't like me, because I told you so about Ronnie Dyer.
yes. There will be people like that, but... ultimately, he's getting the success, which I think he deserves. And it will be very interesting to see how it finishes up this season. Hopefully all very positively on all fronts. And then give him a proper close season to prepare for next year. And I think the second season, assuming everything goes well between now and the 30th of May, that he's got some big plans ahead for a 2015-2016 season.
Well, let's start with the plans, because the first bit of that's winning the treble. So how did you enjoy the game on Sunday at Hampden?
Yeah, I don't think it was the best game of the season, but I think we're pretty much in control. I have to say the day for me started off pretty well with the Green Brigade banner. I have to say that I thought their display was excellent, first class, and pretty confident going into the final. But then you always have that, you know, is he going to have an issue with going to Hampden as a manager and being able to get the players in the right shape of mind, or are they just becoming a little bit complacent? And thankfully they weren't. Great seeing him and Scott Brown leading the team out. And I think those two guys are starting to bond and get it together and really know what the club's about. I felt that on Sunday we could probably have played a little bit better, but, you know, overall... It was well taken, the first goal. Commons hitting it in off the post. What I actually noticed, I was sitting in the top tier of the south stand, uh-huh, Harry, and when that goal went in, there was actually six Celtic players in the penalty box, including both fullbacks, which I thought was really interesting, how well we're pushing up the park. The game started off really well with the Commons goal. Should Dundee United have had a penalty? I would say so, to be honest.
Did you think it was a penalty?
At the game, if it had been at the other end of the park, I would have been screaming madly for a penalty. At the time, yeah, I kind of felt, oh, that looks rather dodgy. Looking at the referee, he doesn't give it, and a sigh of relief. But with my view being higher up in the stadium, it looked a really strong candidate for a penalty. I certainly wouldn't have been surprised, put it that way, Harry, if that penalty had been given on Sunday at Hampden.
The reason I was asking is because I too was in the south stand, and I thought Brown just shoulder charged him off the ball. My brother was in the Celtic end, and Remy... McSween, who's on the At By The Men Celtic podcast, was in the north stand, and they both thought it was a penalty at the time. So I was wondering if it was maybe... When I saw it on the television, I could see that he gave him a wee shove, but the game, I just thought he just leant against him and eased him over.
No, I have to say I was...
You're just biased.
I had a very quick look at the referee and a sigh of relief, which tells me that... it probably was a penalty at the time, and then when you see it afterwards, you think, yeah, we got out of jail free there.
Then the other end, which I didn't have quite such a good view on, but other people have spoken to, and of course they don't show it in the highlights, Griffiths was taken out.
Yes, that looked like a penalty to me, or certainly a free kick. Was that the one that was right on the edge of the box?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I'm not sure if it was inside or not, Harry, but it was certainly a free kick from what I remember. Certainly a foul. It looked to me at the time, and I've not seen it since, that it was right on the line, so it could have been inside or outside the box. But yeah, that looked a good shout as well, I have to say.
So overall, on Sunday, who do you think was the best player on the Celtic side?
I have a great appreciation for Nir Beaton. The way he takes his time, controls the ball, always looking up, always looking to see who's available to get a pass from or to give a pass to. So I thought he had a really good game. And Stefan Johansson as well, I thought had a really good game on Sunday. So I think I'd maybe go for one of those two. I'm not actually sure who did get the Man of the Match award.
It was Stefan Johansson, I think, got the Man of the Match.
Oh, was it? Right, okay. Aye. Well, I would have said either him or Beaton, to be honest with you. I would have said one of those two. I thought James Forrest came on and took his goal particularly well, and then of course fluffed up the whole.
So what do you make of the penalty situation? Should he have taken it or what?
Oh, if you're a forward player in a cup final and your team's already two goals up, you want to be taking that penalty. Absolutely. If it had been me, I would have wanted to take it. If you're feeling confident, why would you not? Uh-huh. And you know, when he took that penalty, there was about 10 minutes still to go?
Aye, yeah, there was 10 minutes. It was about 10 minutes to go, and we were 2-0 up, and we were comfortable by that point because Sean Dillon had decided to try and assassinate a Celtic player.
Yes. So being 2-0 up and you've got a penalty and you've already scored, you want to take it, and then that gives you another 10 minutes to get your hat-trick if he had scored. So, yeah, I would have, if I was James Forrest, I'd have been looking to take that penalty for sure. I would have looked to have been making a better effort of it also.
Do you think maybe part of the problem, though, was there was so much chat in the run-up to it that then he lacked confidence, or there was an issue with his confidence as he then went to hit the ball?
I just wonder if he's maybe been distracted by the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, by the, I want to take it, because it wasn't just Gaudette who was wanting to take it as well. I think was Johansson at him as well.
I just got the impression that what was happening was Johansson and there was somebody else at it. I got the impression they were saying, no, Gaudette's the penalty kick taker on the park.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm thinking, Brown should sort this out. Johansson then goes over to Brown, who seemed to be saying, well, if he wants to take it, let him take it.
Yes. Well, we had a debate about that on the bus on the way back on Sunday, Harry. And I said, I wonder if the rule is that if you get the penalty, you get the first choice of taking it. Because why else would Forrest insist that he was taking it over Gaudette or the word of the captain? Well, why would...
If we try to remember, because we don't get penalties. Have you ever noticed this? This is a bit of a theory of mine. You know how we bemoan refereeing decisions? And one of the points I always make is, if we regularly are the top scorers in the league, that would imply we're in opposition boxes more than anybody else.
Yes.
Which would then imply we should have more penalties than anyone else. Unless teams defend more cleanly against Celtic than they do against other teams.
Well, you know that happens, don't you?
Yeah, well, so, and one of my theories is, have you ever noticed, particularly of late, have you ever noticed how many games Celtic get penalties in after they've won the league?
Yes, or after it happened a couple of seasons ago, we were winning a few games by 4 goals, or certainly 3 goals up, and then you get a penalty that's a bit dodgy. And then when you're 0-0 at Pittodrie or Tannadice, and you get there's a stone wall, or you don't get it.
Yeah, and part of the reason it drew my attention to it was a few years ago when I was bemoaning to someone about penalties. And it was about January time. And, you know, it was a non-Celtic fan and they were doing the usual, you're just paranoid. And I was, I can't remember the figures, but I remember pointing out that we'd scored so many more goals than anybody else yet. I think at that point it was something like half the league had had more penalties than us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the January, February time. And then it must have been three or four seasons ago when we won the league with about five, six games to spare. We virtually get a penalty a game after we won the league. So that by the end of the season, we had like eight penalties.
Yeah.
So it didn't look that bad. But five of the eight penalties had come once we'd won the league. And you may call it paranoia, but I didn't think there was anything different happening in our games once we'd won the league, but we seem to be getting a penalty a game.
Yes. Yes. I mean, when people say it all evens itself out over the course of the season, what they're not really taking into account is when the penalties are... not given. You know, if a penalty is not given when you're 4-0 up, it's not such a big deal. But if it's not given when it's 0-0 and there's 5 minutes to go, that's a big deal.
Yeah. So getting on to the reason why I mentioned that is, I'm not quite sure who our penalty kick taker is. Beaton took a penalty against St Johnstone this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Gaudetti took... So I did wonder whether we maybe have and Commons... is taken, but Commons missed, and that's why Beaton took.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Brown has taken and missed.
Yes.
Forrest has taken. I remember, I can't remember if he eventually missed one, but I certainly remember reading somewhere when Forrest became the penalty taker, Forrest commenting that he used to take penalties all through his schoolboy career and had never missed one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yep. Either there was no designated penalty kick taker on the park, or as you say, or the other thing that I wonder is, if they have a designated penalty kick taker, if he's not on the park, then it's whoever feels confident enough to take the penalty at the time takes it.
Yeah, so would that...
And that would be the first person who grabs the ball who's confident enough to take it should take it.
Yeah. Yes. And it just didn't seem to make sense to me on Sunday, Harry, who the designated penalty taker was. Why would Forrest be so adamant that it was him? And why would... Gaudetti be so adamant it was him? You would have thought that would have been sorted beforehand, even as late as training on Saturday morning, or everyone should turn around to the captain and say, right, whose deal is this?
Yeah, or maybe just, you know, we started talking about it and the Celtic player said, it's all right, Ronnie, we're Celtic and we're playing in a cup final, there won't be a penalty for us.
Well, yeah, it could have been that there was no need to go to do any penalty kick training on Saturday morning at Lennox Town because we weren't expecting to get one in a cup final. That could entirely be true, Harry, for sure.
So we made a mess of the penalty. What did you make it? Was Dylan's red card a red card?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt about it. That was a horrible tackle. It has to be said. If that was one of our players, you'd be extremely disappointed that you would compromise your team's chances in a cup final for such a rash, mistimed, dangerous tackle where the referee, let's be honest, had absolutely no alternative than to send him off. No doubt in my mind that was a straight red. No problem with that at all.
I've not seen so much comment about it in the media. Do you think Jackie McNamara made a complete mess of things in the cup final?
Well,
with the Sean Dillon injury and we scored in the 7 minutes he was off the park.
Well, how long do you give someone? I mean, I would think as soon as the guy goes off to get treatment, you've got your subs warming up, two, three subs warming up. After two or three minutes, if he's not back out, you'd be asking questions. After 5 minutes, you would be saying, this is not happening. Let's get a sub on. So I would say yes. If I was McNamara, I would be deeply upset that I hadn't made the decision earlier to bring on a sub for sure. Yeah, I mean, what was it, 7 minutes? That's quite a long time.
Yeah. Although to be fair to Jackie Mack, he'd obviously then thought this is now too late. And had a sub warming up.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dylan then arrived and he had to send the sub back.
Yes.
Yeah. I suppose in fairness, Jackie McNamara, at that point, you're thinking, it's my captain, it's my best player. You then say to the physio or doctor who's taking him off, how long is it going to be?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if the guy says 5 to 10 minutes, you're saying 5 or 10 minutes, I need to know.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I think there comes a point where you say, that's it. But in that five, if you say it's going to be 5 minutes, then you have your sub stripped and ready to go. You've consulted the fourth official and said, look, we're going to get ready to make a sub. And then if the guy comes back, then you pull back on your decision to make the substitution. But you should have your guy there ready, waiting to come on. Absolutely. So did Jackie screw up? I would think so. I would think so.
So after the cup final, what was your expectation going into the cup replay on last night and Wednesday night?
I was a bit more concerned about last night. I just wondered if complacency would creep in just a little bit. And, you know, we were aware that there wasn't going to be a huge crowd there, although the crowd that were there last night did create a good atmosphere around the stadium, and the fact that everyone was in the lower tier, I think, helped generate the atmosphere. I know it's not popular with you guys who sit up in the top tier and have to get relocated.
Do not start me on that. That is a podcast all on its own of the day, of the week I had last week in relation to my ticket move. That's for another day.
Okay, well, I just thought I would mention it, Harry, so that we could skim over it and then move on to the game, because I knew I would struggle to talk about the crowd and the atmosphere last night without mentioning the fact that the top tier was shut. But of course, if you had got a seat in the lower tier, then you wouldn't have all those relocation problems.
Yeah, do not. Do you know what? I'll give you this much. I ended up. I'll not do it because it then gets into. I will tell you off the podcast what ended up happening to me.
Oh, I look forward to it. You're trying to give me the signal here to move on, aren't you?
No. I'm not. I'm desperately trying to bite my own tongue because I want to go into a detailed conversation, but nobody's really bothered about what happened to me on my ticket. So carry on. You were a bit concerned about the game.
You're a bit concerned about the game pre-match, and then the game starts and you're thinking, oof, Dundee United keeper should have been sent off in what, a minute and a half?
Well, that was one of the things I was going to ask. It's not really touched on. That's a straight red.
I would have thought that was it. I said to my dad, we were sitting with my dad in the south stand right up the back, and they had a pretty decent view of it, I would have said. And I said to my dad, he's off. I'm delighted, he's off. That's a great start for us. And then he just gets a yellow, and I'm going, okay, how does that work?
You know, because it's people say things like, ah, well, Griffiths had overrun the ball. So let's move it away from a goalkeeper for a minute. The ball's in the middle of the park and Brown goes in for a challenge and the Dundee United player sees him coming and just kicks the ball away. And Brown takes the Dundee United player completely out of play, using his whole body to take his legs away from him.
Yes.
Which is, just because it's a goalkeeper, it's not like, see, I could understand it if he clipped it, it was inside the box, and the keeper, after he's hit, you know, the keeper takes out Griffiths and gets a hand on the ball, even after he's taken out Griffiths, I can understand the principle of, well, you know, it's a bit iffy because keepers, you know, it's not like a player taking the ball off somebody's toe. He just took him completely out of play. It's a red card.
He completely floored him. Harry, you're absolutely right. And for me, that was another straight red. There wasn't any doubt in my mind. And that's why I was, you know, getting excited, speaking to my dad, saying, he's off, he has to be off. And then the yellow card. And
do you know that decision summed up to me when supporters of Diddy teams say to me, oh, you guys got all the big decisions at Celtic Park. And I say, nonsense. Because I actually think a lot of the time in Scottish football, they can commit fouls, and we'll get on to Dundee United deciding in the last five, in injury time to go round and kick everybody. They can commit fouls, and I think referees take the opinion of, ugh, they're playing Celtic. and they give them a bit of slack. I've seen, when we're getting back to your point about penalties, I've also seen when we are 3-4-0 up against a team and a Celtic player gets taken out and the guy gets booked, and you think, if that was in the English Premiership, that'd be a red card every single time. But the referee feels sorry for him because they're already 3-4 down at Celtic Park. And I think the referee thought to himself, if I send off the Dundee United goalkeeper inside the first minute, this game is over.
Yeah, and I genuinely believe it would have been, if it had been later on in the game, he may have been more inclined to send him off. But for whatever reason, why he didn't get sent off, I just don't know. But for me, it was a straight red card all day long. No question.
But then thereafter, when we didn't get it, we absolutely blitzed them in the first half.
Yeah, I thought we played really well. Forrest, I would have to say, I felt had a really good game. He absolutely bossed John Rankin, who, talking about players who were lucky to stay in the park, I felt John Rankin should have been sent off for the fouling he'd done on James Forrest. I think James Forrest had the beating of him. I know it's not Rankin's usual position to play, but I thought Forrest had a really good game. And, you know, right across the park, we looked good. Brown, Beaton, Commons. I thought we looked good. We looked comfortable. Stokes as well. I can't say I'm Stokes' biggest admirer, to be honest, but I think he set the ball up brilliantly for the first goal for Denier. It was a long free kick in, as I remember, and a great looping header for Denier. I just wonder if the keeper should maybe have been a little bit closer to his line.
He's not the tallest keeper in the world.
No.
And just that being 2 yards off his line just allowed the ball to loop over him and still fit under the bar.
Yes. He certainly looked to be a little bit out of position. I certainly know if that had been our goalkeeper, then you'd be extremely disappointed not to save that one. So, I think that the first half was really good. And again, going back to the atmosphere, you know, it was all really positive, good atmosphere in all the stands. And, you know, I think part of that is obviously in the back of winning the cup final on Sunday. So there's, you know, a positive feel around the stadium last night, first half I just felt that we would kick on in the second half. I think the level of fitness and the energy in our team, you know, once we get ahead, I think teams will find it very, very difficult to peg us back domestically.
Do you know, you're saying you're a bit concerned about it. Actually, I was a bit the opposite in that, see, after we get beat by St Johnson, and one of the things that I was really pleased about when we get beat by St Johnson was the general attitude of Celtic fans online seemed to be, look, we played a few big games, Sunday, Thursday, whatever it is these days. We just played too many big games in a short period of time, and the players were a bit knackered. But that principle of we get beat by St Johnson because we just ran out of energy because we did the big game against Inter Milan, big game against Aberdeen, big game against Inter Milan on quick succession.
Yes.
I actually thought that would be the problem for Dundee United, that they were playing a big game against Celtic at home in the Cup, a big game against Celtic at Hampden. And before we got the replay, I was thinking the easiest game, the most likely game we'll win will be the league game because it's the last one, because we are fitter than them. As Armstrong and Mackay Stephen have admitted about in training, our training's better and fitter. We know we're better and fitter than everyone else. They might just be a bit knackered by the time it comes around to the last game.
You could well be right there, Harry. So that would mean that we're going to be a shoe-in for this Saturday.
but don't attempt fate. Your point about Forrest, I don't know if anyone heard on Radio Scotland, it was Tom English was talking on the way home about an interview the media guys had done with Ronnie Dialett about Forrest. About how they were really having to work hard on Forrest's confidence because he's had so many injuries that he was now getting to the point where he was frightened to run full out because he just feared as soon as he started running as fast as he could, he would pull a hamstring or pick up an injury.
Yes. I think we need to be aware that as a sport, we need to give all the players our support and confidence. And I think there's one or two players in particular seem to get the brunt of things when things are not going quite so well. And I think Forrest has been one of them. But the guy, as you say, has just got electrifying pace. And with his injury record, you could see why you would be probably lacking in a little bit of confidence. But when he plays, I'm not saying he's unplayable against, but it must make it a really long night for whoever's trying to mark him. And I'm quite sure John Rankin would have been happy to get to the end of that game last night, because he was run about ragged. So yeah, Forrest's confidence certainly needs built up. And I just wonder if he's one of these players who's really going to blossom later on in his career. He certainly has pace, which would be the envy of any team, I'm quite sure. And if we can keep him fit and keep him positive, then I think he's going to have a bright future.
So second half, Dundee United tried for about 10-15 minutes, and then we scored and the game's all over.
Yeah, well, we scored just before the hour mark, if I remember right. Scott Brown, what a ball.
Oh, it was fantastic. Do you know, as the ball's in mid-air, but the other thing was how well Griffiths took it, because there's been a couple of times recently where a long ball has been played, Griffiths tried to take it at stretch, and his first just touch had just not been perfect. He just took it so well, and as the ball's in mid-air, I'm thinking to myself, I know keepers don't like coming that far out in their box, but actually, see if the United keeper doesn't come and take this. Mm-hmm. Griffiths will be standing in the six-yard box with a free shot on goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, Scott Brown starts off.
Penalty spot.
I'm sure he starts the move in our half, and he pushes forward like 20 yards and then a long high ball into the box, and it's not what you would kind of, it's not a typical Scott Brown pass, shall we say. And you're right, Griffiths, he just takes it so cleanly, so perfectly, and he leaves the keeper with absolutely no chance. And I was delighted for Griffiths. I think he's done really well. I think that's him on something like 11 or 12 goals for the season. And
A guy who, by the third or fourth month of the season, he couldn't even get on the bench.
Yes, exactly. He's one of the players who's really blossomed this season. I think Johansson obviously has came on, beat on, and to an extent you could probably mention Craig Gordon as well. But going back to when would it be? What, November, December? He wasn't even quoted, and now he's up to double figures in the goals tally, and he took that goal so cleanly, and you can see he really wants to be here. He wants to play, and even when he came off after scoring the goal, he was down in front of us and he was cheering the crowd on and wanting to make sure that the team goes on to be successful for the rest of the game. It was nice to see. It's nice to see somebody like Lee Griffiths, who's been through a lot, to be successful at the club, and good for him. I was really pleased.
And the fourth goal? Oh, sorry, the third goal. Missed a goal.
We missed a goal. The third goal, that was Commons, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 1-2 with Gadetti. Was it Gadetti, if I remember right? He took it well.
It was Gadetti. I thought Gadetti, who has been criticised a bit online for his selfish attitude after not getting the penalty.
Yes.
I thought he was a bit selfless at that goal. He didn't try and turn and have a shot himself. He laid it off.
Yeah, I remember that now. Gadetti done well with the 1-2, and Commons put it away. I have to say, Chris Commons is one of my favourite players at this moment in time. He's done remarkable since we signed him. He took it well. Took the goal really well. And then for the last one, the 1-2 with the centre-halves.
Two centre-halves being up in their six-yard box doing a 1-2 for a goal.
Exactly, Harry. It goes back to the point I made earlier about the two fullbacks being in the opposition penalty box for the first goal on Sunday. There, you've got the two centre halves playing a 1-2 in the opposing 6-yard box for the fourth goal in a Scottish Cup quarter final. How neat is that?
Oh, do you know, I talked to begin about how sexy is our manager. It's because I'm sort of a bit tongue in cheek because it's really sexy football we're playing.
Oh, yes.
You know, I remember having the debate with St Anthony on this site at the beginning about 4-4-2 and whatever. You don't need two strikers up front when you've got, when you're playing such attacking football that most of the time your fullbacks are playing as wingers and you score a goal where your two centre-halves are doing 1-2s in the 6-yard box of the opposition.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You, no, you're absolutely spot on.
All we need is Craig Gordon going doing a Hearts and going up for a corner kick. We've got the lot.
Yes, exactly. But, I mean, there you go. Hampden on Sunday, two fullbacks in the opposition penalty box for the goal. And last night, two centre-halves playing a 1-2 for the final goal. And they're doing that quite literally in the 6-yard box of the opposing team. That's just incredible attack and play. And I think those two guys between them have scored something like 13 goals this season.
That's fantastic.
I'm not sure. I'm not really up to date with other club stats, but I bet you there's another club in Glasgow whose top two strikers are probably getting paid as much as those two guys are and haven't scored 13 goals between them.
Well, I can tell you, Liam Buchanan of Alloa has scored more goals at Ibrox this season than Chris Boyd.
I'm still here. I'm just trying to think of a suitable response. Right, can I laugh? Good grief. Well, there you go.
So there you go. But there was one other thing that happened in the game, and it all started when a Dundee United, the referee stops play. This is from my perspective. A Dundee United player's lying in the ground. Anthony Stokes is going nuts, wanting to go and attack people. He's been trying, Dundee United players are trying to calm him down. And so I'm immediately thinking, right, Stokes appears to have kicked someone. It appears to be in retaliation. Everybody knows it's in retaliation. And also everybody knows that Stokes is just about to be sent off.
Yes. Yes, there was.
But apart from that, I have no idea what actually happened.
It was happening pretty quickly just down in front of us, but you've seen the reaction from Stokes where he was he was clearly unhappy and there was a lot of jostling going about, and he can get a little bit uptight at times, can't he?
Yeah.
Or Anthony, and yeah, from what I figured, it was like, yeah, somebody's going to walk here, it's going to be our guy this time. So I've not seen any of the replays on TV tonight to see actually.
Have you seen the photograph on Twitter?
No, I haven't.
Coming out of Stokes' mouth.
Well, I seen him holding his mouth as he went off, and it certainly looked as if he was, you know, gesticulating as if, you know, he had got a cut. So yeah, well.
No, I know. I can be a terrible one for reacting to people. However, and so it's difficult to criticise Stokes because I would do the same thing. If somebody elbowed me or punched me in the face,
I think
my first reaction would probably be, and I know you shouldn't, but this is, you know, you've either got this in your nature or you haven't. And my first reaction would probably be to try and kick the guy back.
Yes. But I think, if I remember right, Harry, the referee was pretty close when that happened. He was certainly very quickly on the scene when it all kicked off. So the referee would have had a pretty good view of it, I would imagine.
Well,
so
I got the impression that Stokes knew he was going off. He just wanted the Dundee United guy to go with him.
To come with him. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So that happened. And then I think it was an injury time, and I can't remember which way round. But obviously, there was the McGowan challenge on Henderson, which just out of nowhere, there was nothing coming from it. He just wipes Henderson out. And there was also, I can't remember, I think it was after the McGowan challenge. Rankin then does a two-footed dive-in challenge on someone that could have been a red card. But I think by this point, the referee's just thinking, I don't want to be sending four people off.
Yeah, I think, was the Rankin one not on Forrest again?
Yes.
I think Rankin had several fouls on James Forrest last night, but certainly the Ryan McGowan one, that was an absolute shocker. Right down in the corner flag in front of us, that was a terrible tackle. It could have really done some serious injury with that one. I mean, it was at least as bad as Sean Dillon's was on Sunday in the cup final. Shocking tackle. And it was actually interesting because I seen Gaudette was over pretty quick.
Yeah.
Barging about, pushing his weight about. And then when the Dundee United player McGowan gets sent off, I actually seen Gaudette waving at McGowan as he's going off. You know, when the fans were shouting, cheerio, cheerio, yeah, cheerio. I'm sure Gaudette was waving at him. And I thought that appealed to my warped sense of humour, shall we say.
And the thing about it is, Dundee United have appealed McGowan's red card and have said things like, it looked worse than it was because of the reaction of the Celtic players. He set it off about the halfway line.
Yes, I think...
Henderson's facing away from goal. I think he's about to run the ball out of play. He's got nowhere to go.
Yeah, he's running down the clock. Yeah, I mean, it was into injury time when that happened.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was, Harry. Yeah. If they appeal that red card, that means he gets to play
on Saturday.
On Saturday against us again.
Again. Yeah.
Wow. I think Saturday might be really interesting because there's over the last three games there's some personal battles being fought. And it must be difficult for the players to get it out of their system when they're playing the same team three times in, a week and a half, really?
Yeah.
Or this will be, the fourth game in barely 2 weeks. So that makes it difficult.
Although I think if I was Celtic people, I'd be more inclined to say, we've now beaten them three times. The best way to get to deal with whatever they do in the park is just to beat them for a fourth time. You're humiliating them by beating them comfortably.
Yeah, well, sorry, this will be the third win and one draw.
Aye.
Sorry.
Aye.
So, yes. Point. Yes. Well, we beat them on Saturday, we get to keep them, don't we?
That's aye, yes, exactly. They go on the mantelpiece. Jackie McNamara does. I tell you what, people were talking about Jackie McNamara as a potential Celtic manager. He's not handled defeat very well. His team seems to be leaving the boot in and they can't defend.
Jackie McNamara's not going to get the next Celtic manager's job. You and I both know that. That's not going to happen. I think there's been a little bit of sour grapes from Jackie. But hey-ho, that's life. We focus on what we're doing. And the positives after last night is we've got a wonderful semi-final to look forward to at 12:15 on a Sunday against Inverness.
Yeah, it's a great kick-off time. Before I get to that, the one thing about the game that I did think, and as I say, I'm not going to criticise Stokes because I can react to things, but as soon as he went off, I thought, do you know what? You have played really well at Hampden and even better tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You're now going to be suspended and Mackay Stephen and Armstrong will be back in the team and that's you?
Yes, yes.
Because it would have been difficult to drop him for Saturday. Because he's played the last two games.
Well, he's played well, but do you not think the manager would just want to freshen it up anyway?
Yeah, he may have done, but again, I think the manager also likes to reward people for trying and doing well.
Absolutely, yes. And you're right, he has played well. And I suppose that's part of the whole team philosophy is that you don't get involved in that stuff because you compromise your team, as Sean Dillon did on Sunday, and make your team vulnerable. And it also weakens your position, particularly if you know you've got two young kids who are bright, keen and energetic and looking to take the opportunity to make a name for themselves. So, yeah, I mean, in some respects... you know, he's not helping his own personal case, not just for Saturday, but for, you know, for the future as well.
But you touch on the Cup semi-final at 12:15. Now, you don't live in Timbuktu, but people will tell from your accent, you're not staying in Castlemilk at the moment.
No, I'm not. I'm in sunny, glorious Fife. Although I was born in Glasgow, so I am a Glaswegian at heart.
Yeah, but you come through from the kingdom. What time will you have to set off to get to a game at Hampden at 12:15? And how will you get there?
Well, we'll leave on our supporters' bus probably 12:15 kickoff. So we'll be leaving 9 o'clock, roughly, because...
And you only live in Fife?
Yes. We were on Sunday, we were at Celtic Park in one of the lounges from the affiliation, and we left Hampden at 1:45 exactly, and we got parked in the Gorbals and then had to walk all the way up to Hampden, which is not ideal for any supporters, but thankfully it was a decent day. But you know, we've got pensioners and people with walking difficulties on our bus, so you know, we need to get there early. But a 12:15 kickoff on a Sunday at Hampden, it's not exactly ideal for us. I do have to say, I do have sympathy for the Inverness fans who are going to have to come down at a ridiculous hour. But really, Harry, how many times have we went up to Inverness, and Dingwall and other places for 12:15 kickoffs over the years? And there is not a hue and cry in the press about that. That's just Celtic supporters. They're expected to do it.
Yeah, because we subsidise Scottish football.
Exactly, exactly. We'll take 3,000 or 4,000 fans to Inverness, to Dingwall, to Aberdeen, Dundee, and there's not a care in the world as to the kickoff time or how people travel. So I'm a firm believer in making football experiences good for both sets of supporters. So it's not ideal for Celtic supporters, and I know a lot of Celtic supporters for the semi-final will be coming from a lot further than Inverness. There will be people coming over from Ireland, from all parts of England, and probably even further afield. It's not ideal, but unfortunately it's part of the modern game.
Yeah. Anyway, and sorry to sound so sort of very downbeat when I said yeah there. It's more because it's one of my big bugbears of how football fans are treated. And my great concern, you'll be the same as me, I started going to football a lot and started to go with my brother without my dad for a period in the 80s when football supporters really were a subclass. And there are just wee bits and pieces in Scotland just now that just makes me really uncomfortable about returning to that football fans are a subclass of society concept, the Offensive Behaviour Act and other such things. And the whole thing about just not understanding the concept that it's a customer service world that we live in.
Exactly. I mean, as I was saying, in terms of customer service, you know, walking, 2.5 miles to Hampden on Sunday, kick-off times been changing, the ridiculous Offensive Behaviour Act, fans not being treated well, lack of facilities at some stadiums, overpriced food. Yeah, it's difficult to keep supporters engaged when there's so many other distractions that offer far better customer service than what football does. Absolutely. That is a problem. And you know, on Sunday after the walk back from Hampden to the coach, you know, we had 2 or 3 members of our bus saying, "I don't want to come back to Hampden ever again." And some of them probably won't.
You didn't have stewards with big spongy hands high fiving you as you walked past and saying, "Sorry, it's such a long walk," as you got for the Commonwealth Games. You didn't have any of that, no.
No, funnily enough, we never seen anybody to assist us to give us any help whatsoever.
There wasn't a wee buggy. There wasn't any notes saying if any of the supporters' bus were over a certain age, there was free transport to the ground as you got the Commonwealth Games. Wasn't that no?
They must have been having a day off on Sunday. You know the deal. Yeah, you're a football fan. It's your team's in the cup final. Just be glad your team's in the cup final and we'll expect you to walk for 3 miles. As I said, the blessing was that the weather was decent on Sunday. But yeah, in terms of customer service, Hampden is just a nightmare venue. The lack of facilities in and around Hampden is deplorable for the National Stadium for Scotland. It's embarrassing.
But then it gets me to a bigger... probably for a podcast in its own right, the lack of customer service, the way that football fans should be treated as normal. Do you know what I think the basic intrinsic part of it is? You know how if you speak to people who are not massive football fans and have the type of conversation, they do eventually get round to you deserve it because you the way you behave. That's roughly the argument eventually comes to. Do you know what I think the problem is? Too many people who run football think the same way. They think half the support deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Their own supporters as much as, you know, for every club probably, their own support as much as anything else deserve it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. There's some people who have a misguided view of a football supporter based on who knows what. But in terms of looking after the customer base, that's where football clubs really need to get a grip and start looking at what they provide in terms of facilities for supporters. As I said, Hampden is a particular bugbear of mine, Harry. The lack of facilities in and around that area is not conducive to a family football environment.
No. But there is one club that tries to offer more than being just a football club. And fortunately enough, we support it.
Yeehaw! Exactly. Yes.
So you've been on our podcast twice before talking about it, but, you know, not everybody listens avidly for some reason. We do send around the podcast police to them, but not every supporter listens avidly to every Celtic Underground podcast. So
I can't believe that.
Oh, I know. It's hard to believe, I know. You know, I'll give you their names and addresses later. But
What I can't understand, Harry, is with such good sound system on your podcast, how everybody isn't listening. And you have to really commend your sound engineers who are working away frantically in the background to make sure this is up to your usual high standard. Well done to them.
As people can tell from listening to this one, the guy battled through the M8 tonight to make sure that your kit was set up. He got the satellite dish up on your roof to beam across and paid for the satellite link for us to have this perfect chat. So I don't know why people don't listen to it more, but you, Mr. Mark Cameron, at Lefty Boy on Twitter. So first question is, why at Lefty Boy? Are you a secret communist?
No, I'm not a secret communist.
Well, you could be an open communist.
No, I'm not a communist. No, the name at Lefty Boy. I went to a mixed primary school, mixed denominational primary school, and I was the only person who kicked with my left foot in the school, apparently. So everyone found it particularly fascinating that there was one guy in the school who kicked with his left foot. So my nickname when I started playing football was Lefty. As I moved into my teenage years and started going to watch the team, it became Lefty Boy, and it's just stuck for all those years. So that was when I decided to go on Twitter. I put at Lefty Boy simply because I couldn't be any more original, or couldn't be bothered spending any more time thinking about a name.
Well, that's a fair enough reason, but the other thing, Lefty Boy, that you do is you are very heavily involved with the Celtic FC Foundation.
Yes, so a wonderful charity.
It is a wonderful charity, and the more I know about the Celtic FC Foundation, the more I am proud that I am a Celtic supporter and that we are more than a club and we do more. So what work are you doing with Celtic Foundation, Celtic FC Foundation, not to sound like Paul Cooney, who couldn't get the name right once in 20 attempts?
Yes, despite being briefed several times. Celtic FC Foundation, we have a supporters committee for the foundation, which basically is trying to engage with as many supporters as possible about the work of the foundation, and also to get them to take part in fundraising events that the either the supporters committee or the foundation themselves are organising to raise funds for the key areas of the foundation. And we've quite a variety of events coming up during the course of this year. In a couple of weeks' time, we have a golf day, which the funds will be used to support autism. That's on the 2nd of April at Renfrew Golf Club. And I think the teams are all sold for that. So at the 2nd is it? The 2nd of April, sorry, is also World Autism Day, so that fits in nicely there. We have a zip slide from the North Stand into the lower Lisbon Lines on the 28th of
Are you doing
this
that?
Month.
Are you doing that, Mark?
I would like to do that, Harry, but as you know, I am scared of heights and it is already sold out. So although I was desperate to take part, I just missed out. Okay, I'm a shite bag. You just couldn't wait. We've been speaking for almost an hour and you just couldn't wait to tell me I'm a shite bag.
Correct, yes. To be fair, you do a million and one other things, so I can't really criticise. I can't walk the length of myself, and you go up Ben Nevis and you cycle to Cardenden, so it's not really much of a criticism to say you won't jump off the top to your Celtic Park.
Yes. Okay, I'll take that. Yeah, so zip slide, 25 seconds, stupidity from the north, the Jockstein into the lower Lisbon Lines. Again, thankfully, places for that are sold out, although there is a reserve list in case we have any cancellations. And what we pretty much do, Harry, is ask everyone who's taken part to raise a minimum of £125 for Celtic FC Foundation, which is not a great deal in the overall scheme of things as well. So the golf day and the zip slide are well on their way to being successful. We are planning to have
a
badge.
There's some guest places that people want to go to the dinner, because Tom Boyd's going to the golf, I'm thinking about. Tom Boyd's going and Bobby Pettis going, so... There are some guest places, aren't there, still?
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks for reminding me.
Sound engineer just gave me that piece
all
of
right,
paper.
Did he just tip you the wink? Very yeah. Good. So, yes, at the golf day on the 2nd of April, there's some partner places, if you like, for people to bring guests, or if you're in the Renfrew area and you fancy a nice lunch with some Celtic legends, then tickets are still available for that, and you can get them from contacting the Celtic FC Foundation, and you'll find a link on the Celtic FC homepage for that. We are planning a badge day at the end of the season, where we'll have badges for sale in and around Celtic Park, and hopefully people will make a donation to the foundation on that day. Last year's event, I think in total we raised something like £16,000, which goes an enormously way to helping the projects around health, equality, learning and poverty, which is the key areas for the foundation. A lot of the work that the foundation do is in the Glasgow area, the north and east of Glasgow, obviously other parts of Strathclyde, in the wider community across Scotland and Ireland and the rest of the UK, and also do some work in Asia and Africa as well. So there's quite a spread, Harry, of where the foundation is working to improve the lives of people who are less fortunate than ourselves.
And anybody can get involved. It's not some Celtic fan elite.
No, absolutely not. absolutely not. The commitment that we ask for on these events, as we said, is to raise £125 for the foundation. So we have certainly had in previous events, people who are, you don't need to be a season ticket holder, you just need to have a passion for helping others and doing a bit of fundraising and taking on a challenge like a climb up Ben Nevis or a cycle to Cardenden, or maybe take part in the Great Scottish Run and donate the proceeds to Celtic FC Foundation.
So you would, and I will put on the links, I think actually there'll be a link at the beginning and a link at the end as to how people might get to participate, or just, if you want to just, I'm quite sure if somebody just phoned up and said, what can I do? How can I get involved with the foundation? Or sent an email in, somebody will give them what they could do and give them a list of events.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You could email the Celtic Foundation. Again, the links are on both the club website and also on the Celtic FC Foundation website. So there's lots of links there. You can email in. There's phone numbers there to contact directly with the foundation and lend your support. And you can go on the mailing list for future events.
Yeah, because we need bucket collectors.
Very soon we will be looking for about 120 volunteers to take part in the bucket collection, and it's pretty straightforward. You get a load of badges, you rattle your bucket, and you help the Celtic FC Foundation make lives better for people in the key areas. That the badge day is particularly easy. I think we're looking at a design which will be particularly appropriate to the season that we're having.
Sexy.
It could be very well in Harry Brady's world. It could be a very sexy badge.
So after everybody's logged on and emailed CFC Foundation at CelticFC.co.uk, we've got a game on Saturday against Dundee United. Now, by the time we play that game, Aberdeen could be neck and neck in points with us, and we'll only have 75 games in hand. Title challenge is on again.
Yeah, title challenge is back on. And the only thing that worries me now is just guarding against complacency. I think all the hard work and effort has been put in with the manager and the team and the players and the fitness level and losing weight and improving diet and getting the tactics right and getting the players to understand. We just need to keep focused, keep our eye on the ball, and the rewards will be there at the end of the season.
Is that your management chat? Is that what you were
saying? I'm on the Ronnie bus team talk for this weekend.
The driver's driving away. You picked up the microphone and you said, right, boys.
Ronnie's not here just now. I'm taking over. Here's your team talk. Keep focused and it'll all be worthwhile and we will have a season to remember, which is a complete contrast to what a lot of people thought back in July, and a big contrast to what some people thought in December and even into January.
Yeah, they're sitting with their heads hanging in shame at the back of the Ronnie bus. People throwing sweets at them and stuff at them, popcorn at them.
But we will let them on the Ronnie bus.
We will, because do you know what? All's forgiven when all's forgiven in the Ronnie bus. We can all. I think it's in the Scottish psyche that people sometimes, their default position is to say something's going to be crap and then come round to the good side. I think that's an endemic problem in Scotland. So what's the team going to be? You've done your team talk. Who are you talking to for Saturday?
I'm going to freshen it up and I'm going to bring in the two young boys, Mackay Stevenson and Armstrong. And I'm going to go with the same back four, and who I'm going to leave out is going to possibly, although I've spoken him up tonight, I think I might leave out Forrest.
Right.
And Stokes.
Well, Stokes will be suspended because it was a
He'll be suspended anyway. So Forrest and Stokes out, I think. How would that work with the two guys coming in?
Well, Johansson's back available, as you know.
Johansson's.
Commons is available, so you've got three from four there.
So it's going to be Mackay Stephen, Armstrong, Commons, Griffiths.
Right.
As a front four.
So you're dropping Johansson?
I might.
Or has he been rested in your team talk chat?
I wonder if I'm going to go with Brown and Beaton. And I'm going to leave those two, and then we're going with the other front four, Mackay Stephen, Armstrong, Griffiths and Commons. Does that work? I've probably got about 13 players there. I should have wrote this team down.
No, you've got Gordon and Goal, you've got Ambrose and Izaguirre and Ryan and
Vandy.
Then you've got Beaton and Brown. And then you've got Armstrong, Commons, Mackay Stephen and Griffiths up front.
Yep, that's me.
And on the bench is Johansson.
Johansson, Forrest,
Gaudette,
Liam Henderson and Callum McGregor. Because we're not going to need any defenders on the subs bench on Saturday, because we are going to be defending in their penalty box like we did in the cup final with two full backs, and then we're going to have our two centre halves playing a 1-2 tappy in a up their end of the park in the 6-yard box like we did last night.
So the score?
It's going to be same as last night. 4-0.
Yeah. Excellent.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Yeah, easy peasy lemon squeezy. And on that, I think that's a good note to leave it on. I'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much, Harry. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, cheers, Mark. I hope you enjoyed that, and we're really on the ball here at Celtic Underground Towers, because podcast number 242 has already been recorded by Mr. St. Anthony. So that's going to be out sometime in the next few days. Then we will have another podcast number 243, which will be incredibly, I know you're not going to believe this, it'll be followed by podcast number 244. But enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Mark Cameron, stroke Lefty Boy, saying goodnight. Goodnight. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. When I walk in the spot, yeah, this is what I see. Everybody stops and is staring at me. I got passion in my pants and I ain't afraid to show it. Show it. I'm sexy and I know it. I'm sexy and I know it. Yeah, when I'm at the mall, security just can't fight them all. And when I'm at the beach, I'm in a speedo trying to tan my cheeks. But this is how I roll, come on ladies, it's time to go. We headed to the bar, baby, don't be nervous. No shoes, no shirt, and I still get service. Watch. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. When I walk in the spot, yeah, this is what I see. Everybody stops and is staring at me. I got passion in my pants and I ain't afraid to show it. Show it, show it, show it. I'm sexy and I know it. Aye. I'm sexy and I know it. Check it out. Check it out. Wiggle, 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 yeah. Wiggle, 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 yeah. Wiggle, 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 yeah. Wiggle, 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 yeah, yeah. Do the wiggle, man. I do the wiggle, man. Yeah. I'm sexy and I know it. Hey. Yeah. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out.
I'm sexy and I know it.